Welcome to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop, where you'll find the unique, the bizarre, and sometimes the haunted. Feel free to look around, peruse the items, and never fear, there's nothing here that bites. Hard, anyway. Hello there. Welcome to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. I am your shopkeeper, Chris Baker, and today an interesting item to show you. Maybe not so much an item. We've looked through this item before. If you'll follow me up the stairs here as we go to our little observatory alcove on the mezzanine, if you look through our large telescope, I've taken the liberty of focusing on a galaxy far, far away. Now, of course, as we know, the light that travels through space, some of these stars, by the time we're seeing the light they shed, we're seeing light from a distant past. So one could say these stars we're looking at are from long ago in a galaxy far, far away. And oh, the stories that one might experience from that galaxy. But this is not the galaxy we're looking at. This one is slightly askew from that galaxy. So without further ado, let's pull out the kinetoscope and take a look at the new Netflix film, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. So Rebel Moon, if you haven't listened to my episode on the first Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire, it was released back in December of last year on Netflix, and I talked all about it and all of my thoughts on it. I did not like this movie. I didn't think it was that good. It had a lot of good things going for it, but it was too derivative of too many things, and not even the wonderful cast could save just a poorly written movie from a director that I've mostly enjoyed. Zack Snyder is, I think, a fantastic director, and he's done a lot of really good things over the years. You know, when you talk about Justice League, I liked the Snyder Cut more than the original Justice League movie. Doesn't mean it was a good movie in its entirety, but I liked his version better. I liked where his version went better. So I've been a Zack Snyder fan, and when I found out that he was doing these movies, the Rebel Moon movies, I was elated because I heard that, okay, this was originally set to be a rated R Star Wars movie, and Star Wars and Lucasfilms eventually turned it down, so he went to do his own thing. I thought, okay, well, he's going to change things up enough, so it's not going to be a Star Wars movie, but it'll still have some of the feel of a rebellion and an evil empire, you know, that sort of thing. Fairly generic in the pantheon of movies and science fiction. He'll take Star Wars, the basic idea, and make it his own. And when we got the movie, it was essentially like he did a search and replace on all the Empire and just searched it to Mother World, and all of the, you know, Star Destroyers were changed to Dreadnoughts, and various things, various Star Wars imagery was changed just slightly enough. You had these big ships that look like Star Destroyers. They're kind of triangular like Star Destroyers, but he changed them just enough. So it wasn't a Star Destroyer, but I'm like, okay, that's supposed to be a Star Destroyer. You've got flaming blades or electric blades or whatever. I'm like, oh, these are supposed to be lightsabers. Everything just felt very derivative of Star Wars, and not in a good way. I mean, it felt like, okay, this is the kind of Star Wars you get if you bought it off of Temu. And besides the fact that this movie is a blatant ripoff of Kurosawa's Seven Samurai, and it's not to say that other movies haven't done that before. You know, Magnificent Seven was a Western version of Seven Samurai. Battle Beyond the Stars was a space opera version of Seven Samurai. So it's not like you can't do it and do it well, but when you're just so overt about it, and it's already been done in a space movie with Battle Beyond the Stars, I can see why Lucasfilm turned this down. And it's one of the few things I can respect about the decision-making at Lucasfilms. But we had this movie, Rebel Moon, A Child of Fire. I didn't care for it. If you want my full thoughts on it, go check out our episode on that from back in December, I believe. That probably came out right after that movie hit Netflix. But we found out that there was going to be a part two, Rebel Moon Scargiver, which came out this past weekend, and it really was much of the same. And I'm not going to get too far into the weeds on this. For the most part, if you want to know my thoughts on this movie, they're very similar to my thoughts on the first one, but I am going to talk about some particular things I just didn't enjoy about this movie, and there were some things I did enjoy. So we'll talk about that, but we are going to get into some spoiler territory. So if you haven't watched Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, go watch it, then come back, hear my thoughts on it, but we are going to head into some spoiler territory. So first off, I'm going to talk about what I did like about this movie. I love the cast. I thought the cast was really good. I thought the characters were really interesting. And that's probably one of the things I enjoyed most about the last movie, is I thought Sophia Boutella as Cora, I thought she did a really good job. Hers is a very interesting character. It is fairly run-of-the-mill, strong female lead, but I enjoyed her performance as this fairly generic female protagonist. This character didn't break any ground, but her portrayal of it was really interesting, and it has an interesting enough backstory that I was engaged enough. Mikhail Houseman as Gunner, I thought he did a really good job, and probably one of the scenes that it didn't really hit me emotionally like it probably should have, but it was when his character, you know, this is the spoiler section, so you knew what you were getting into, but when his character dies at the end, I wasn't necessarily expecting it, and it did elicit a little emotion, but the script didn't make me care about these characters enough for it to really hit. But it was, you know, his performance in that death scene, I think, is what sold it and made it kind of like a, maybe not a tear-jerking moment, but you felt some of the loss of this character, because I really did like this character, and his portrayal of it was really enjoyable. He's an enjoyable actor, you know. I've loved him from his time as Dario Naharis on Game of Thrones. Not the original Dario Naharis, when Dario Naharis got his glow down. That's that Dario Naharis. But I really liked him in that. Loved him in The Haunting of Hill House. And he was one of the, you know, him and a lot of these other actors were what made this movie at least watchable. Ed Skrein, I'm hopefully pronouncing his name correctly, as Atticus Noble, the main bad guy. Well, not the main bad guy of the series, but the main bad guy of these two movies. He does a really good job, adds enough menace and enough of that villain quality that you would want from a space Nazi. Couple characters I would have liked to have seen more of is the Tarrant character, played by Staz Nair. I thought he did a really good job. It's just an underutilized character. Same with the Titus character. I mean, they used him a lot. He is the general who's whipping these farmers into a fighting force, but you just didn't, you know, other than those just kind of bland scenes with him, you know, giving rousing speeches and telling people, you know, what to do. The character just doesn't have anything real to do other than that. And Jimon Hounsou, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably butchering his last name and I apologize. But he played the character well. It's just the character, same as the Tarrant character. Tarrant character just didn't have anything to do. And now I imagine maybe some of these characters will get better stories and the potential sequels to this, but I don't know if I care at this point. And it's a shame because the actors, like I said, did a really good job with their characters. Another actress, Duna Bay, plays Nemesis. That was the only character that had a story that really I felt her death. She's this very stoic, removed character who just keeps to herself and is very serious. And And there's moments with her and this little boy where this little boy is taking this stalk of wheat and kind of trying to tickle her, and she grabs it and he kind of runs off, and you get this little bit of a smile, you know, something she probably hasn't experienced before, or at least not in a long time, of the fun of playing with a child. And I can't even remember her backstory from the first movie, because it was so unmemorable, at least the explanation of it. But she is this very sad character and a very melancholy looking character. And when she dies protecting this boy, and this boy tries to save her, and just the interaction between the two at the time of her death was just very, like, the one heart-wrenching, the one earned emotion of this movie that I wish that Mikhail Houseman's Gunner character, I wish his death could have had that much power to it. But this is like the one thing in this movie that made you feel something. And it's a shame that Duna Bay's nemesis character is dead now, but she added something this movie lacked in a lot of other areas. And of course, Anthony Hopkins is back as the robot Jimmy. And there again, such an underutilized character. And such an underutilized actor. You had so much in the trailer made it sound like there was just going to be this big moment where the Jimmy robot decides he's going to fight because he was a warrior robot under the old king. And now that that king has been killed, he's been reprogrammed to be just kind of a service droid. And you have that moment where he decides he's going to fight to protect this young girl in this village. And you have this moment, I want to say it was in the trailer, but I don't remember it in the movie, where he makes the decision to decide to fight. And you didn't get that in the movie. And it was just like, oh, okay, he's going to fight now after being sidelined for the better part of the movie. And it was just so underwhelming, which is a shame because you've got Anthony Hopkins voicing this character. And it just felt like another wasted character and a wasted actor. So outside of this movie having a really good cast of actors, some of them lived up to the roles that they were given as much as they could. I mean, there, even some of these really good actors couldn't elevate the poorly written characters that were given to them. But then you have some actors that just weren't given anything to do. And it's a shame because I really did enjoy the acting from this cast. I thought they were really good. The other thing I really enjoyed were the special effects. I thought the CG was pretty good. The ships and the droids and the blasts from these guns, and how it almost makes like a plasma, like explosion off of things that it hits. It was really interesting. Everything looked good. The CG and the practical effects, I thought were all done really well. This movie, if it were written better, could have been a better movie and a more enjoyable movie, because like half of what you need for a really good movie, you had a really good cast, you had really good actors, and you had really good special effects. And all you had to do was just write a story that played to those strengths, and they couldn't do it. The story was bland. The story was very cookie cutter. I thought that you had a lot of moments that just felt like, okay, I've seen this a million times before, and now it's just set on a different planet or in space or what have you. Now, we'll say the battle that took place on this moon, this rebel moon, this battle that took place was very well thought out and very well choreographed, and it was quite interesting. The only problem is, like, the characters that I'm seeing, it was never really felt like any tension built on whether these characters were going to survive or whether they're going to die. You had the nemesis character was the only character that died during the battle, and it really wasn't even the battle per se. You did have the gunner character die, but there again, like I said, it lacked the emotion that character dying should have had, because I didn't really care about the love story between him and Korra. That didn't have any emotion that was earned. But from a battle sequence, I enjoyed the battle sequence. I think where this movie got really bogged down was, one, too many exposition scenes. I mean, that's the problem that the first Rebel Moon had. Too many exposition scenes. You had all of these warriors gathered together, And we've seen some of their backstory. We've already heard some of their backstory, but they had to have another scene where they all sit down around a table and they all explain their backstory again. And maybe in a little bit more detail, but I didn't need to hear their backstories again. It was just like I talked about in the Abigail episode we did for Monday. It was a kind of a tale of two cities. You have Abigail, who had an exposition scene that told people's backstories that was interesting and maybe a little different and not what you would normally expect. And then you had this, which was just people going around, here's my backstory. Here's my backstory. Here's my backstory. What about your backstory? Oh, and your backstory? And it drew out so freaking long. And that wasn't the only scene of exposition. There were just so many scenes where it's just somebody explaining what's going on and not in an interesting or fun way or an enlightening way. It's just telling me either what I've already seen or what I already have heard is going to happen. And the exposition, they could have called this movie, instead of Rebel Moon, they could have either called this movie Exposition Moon. That would have worked. Or Slow Motion Moon, because that was one of my other big pet peeves about this movie, is Zack Snyder is known for his love of slow-mo scenes, but Jesus, please us, this movie exceeded even his grandest levels of slow-mo scenes. There's a scene where they're collecting grain because the Mother World is coming to collect grain to feed their troops. And that is going to be the bait, and that is going to be what protects them. And that never really came into it. They never used the grain or the flour as a shield of any kind. The Mother World didn't really give a fuck about the grain. That was, I don't know. I don't even know why they brought it up. But I think they did that. I think Zack Snyder did that just so he could have a scene where they're collecting grain and he could do a slow-mo shot every other fucking scene. And not even just that. I mean, god damn it. If I had to see one more scythe swing in slow motion or one more bundle of grain walking, moving towards a big cart or little bits of grain falling in slow motion, that lost me right off the bat. And it wasn't just that scene. Like, every other scene in this movie was a fucking slow-mo shot. This movie was just over 2 hours long. It probably could have been cut down by like 10, 15 minutes if Zack Snyder, don't take the slow-mo scenes out, leave the scenes in, just don't do them in slow-mo, because that just made a very long and painful movie to watch from a storytelling standpoint, made it even more excruciating, but dragging it out longer than it had to be. And of course, the way this movie ended, they're obviously trying to set up for a sequel. I know Zack Snyder has said he really looks at Rebel Moon Part 1 and Part 2 as one movie, just done in two. And then I think he wants to do at least two more films to kind of make it a trilogy, maybe more. He wants to create this whole big universe. And then they really set up the ending for this, because we had the character Atticus Noble, who is the big antagonist for these past two movies. But there's an even bigger antagonist, Regent Belisarius, who is the adopted father for Korra, played by Frey Fee. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's a character that we've had reference to many a time, and there's a big showdown that's probably going to happen at some point between him and Korra. I don't know if that's a fake beard he's wearing, but by God, it looks fake. If that's a real beard, that's the fakest looking real beard I have ever seen in my life on this poor actor. But at any rate, he is the bigger bad in the pantheon of this world, this universe that we're in, this galaxy that we're in. And they're setting it up for, that's the next phase of the movie, is all these warriors that we've gathered together, at least the ones surviving, they're going to go take on the Mother World. And I have to imagine they're saving that for whatever the last movie is. The big showdown between Korra and Regent Belisarius. That's your big Luke Vader scene at the end of Jedi. So we'll probably have one more movie in between this and that final movie. That's going to be a lot more nonsense and a lot more slow-mo scenes and a lot more exposition on characters that we've already heard, exposition about who they are and where they came from. I would like to see like some of these characters, the Tarek character, the Titus character, their motivations, their stories fleshed out a little more and not just an exposition. I want to see things on the screen. I don't want to be told things on the screen. I would like to see these characters. They're interesting characters, and they have interesting backstories that just kind of went to waste. If I have to hear about how Korra was raised by Regent Belisarius, and she's the reason the childlike princess, or the Child of Fire, or whatever the princess's name is, she killed her. And oh, well, no, she didn't kill her. How could you kill a being like that? It was a lot of nonsense that where you need some explaining, or you maybe need a little exposition, maybe not as done as poorly as the exposition in this movie or the previous movie, but something telling me what makes her special, what makes this princess special that she survived being assassinated. I'm sure we'll be saved all that exposition for the next movie, but I don't know, do we even see a next movie? Because these movies have been shit on by critics and fans alike. That's not to say there aren't some people out there that I'm sure probably love this movie and think it's great. I don't agree with them, but I don't know if we get another movie out of this. If we do, it wouldn't surprise me, but it also wouldn't surprise me if Netflix just cut bait with this series. Now, when we'll see a third movie, if that's in the works, I don't know. I do know that coming out, I think sometime during the middle of this year, maybe a couple months away, a few months away, we are going to get that rated R version of the first movie, Rebel Moon, A Child of Fire, that the Zack Snyder cut of that movie, which why in the fuck you do that when Netflix told you, make us a movie. You could have made whatever movie you wanted. And he decided that, you know, he's going to be Zack Snyder and do a regular movie, but then we're going to do the real movie and show that later. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be. I don't know if I care about watching it. Even if it is going to have a few more F-bombs or be a little more bloody and violent, I don't know if I care, because I haven't been made to care about these characters thus far. A few more F-bombs and some blood and violence isn't going to make me care about these characters anymore. But from what I understand, it's supposed to be almost like a completely different movie. So I'll give it a watch. I don't know whether I'll talk about it, at least not in any length. Maybe I'll do a random curiosity on it and just give you my initial reaction to it. But we'll see when that comes out. And like I said, we'll see if we get another movie in this Rebel Moon franchise, if you will. So definitely, I would never tell you not to watch a movie. I didn't like this. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the first one, but you know, I watched the second one because I'm like, I'm a completist. You know, I've got to watch the next one. And also, you know, I got to watch it if I'm going to talk about it on this podcast. But I didn't enjoy it. It had a lot of potential. There is a lot of room for movies that are like Star Wars, but aren't Star Wars. And if they're done well, I'm excited about them. The problem with this was it wasn't done well. I mean, it looked good. It was slickly produced. It had a lot of great effects. It had a lot of really good actors. The story just wasn't there. And not even so much the story. I think the story's interesting enough, but I think the story just missed the mark on a lot of emotional connectivity between characters and the audience. It missed on storytelling things like exposition. There's too much of that. Zack Snyder was trying to be too artistic with slow-mos every other fucking scene. It was too derivative of things like Seven Samurai. I know I've been beating the shit out of that, but you can't watch it and not see Seven Samurai. You can't watch it and not see Star Wars, because he took so much of the Star Wars terminology and iconography out, but left too much of its imprint in its place. So it felt like I was watching not a movie set in the stars with battles and spaceships and laser guns or anything like that, laser swords even. It felt like I was watching the dollar store version of Star Wars. This is what Star Wars would look like if, like, some foreign country made a knockoff version, because they don't give a fuck about copyright and trademarks and IP and anything like that. So there again, not a fan of Rebel Moon Part 1 or Part 2. At this point, I don't care if I see another Rebel Moon movie. I would like to think that if they got another crack, they would make up for the mistakes that they made during these two movies. But I dare say Zack Snyder's just going to double down on what he wants to do. And, you know, that's his prerogative. But it's also my prerogative not to watch. Unfortunately, if they do make another movie, I'm going to have to watch it because I'm going to have to talk about it on this podcast. But I'm not going to like it. At least I hope I like it, but I probably won't. So hopefully you enjoyed this movie much more than I did. It wouldn't take much to like it more than I did. If you have watched it and you didn't like it, hey, you know, I feel you. And we could probably start a support group somewhere along the line. So I want to thank everyone for listening to my thoughts on Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please check out more about what's going on with Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop on our Facebook page, our Instagram page. We're always posting about horror, fantasy, and science fiction and everything that's going on with the podcast. Wherever you listen to this podcast, like, follow, subscribe to it. And as always, leave those reviews. 5 stars would be awesome. And share this podcast with anyone that you know that loves horror, fantasy, and science fiction. So until next time.
Thank you for visiting Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. We hope that you found something to your liking and visit the shop again soon. But even though you may come back, you never really get to leave Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop.